coffee stay black, just like me.
Welcome back to the Coffee Black Podcast. My name is Bartholomew Jones. I'm an educator, I'm an MC, I'm a coffee nerd, and we are here live in Kigali, Rwanda with the homie, Kenny. You know what I'm saying, bro? He got coffee in the building, family. Before we get into it, I always like to ask our guests, what you sipping on right now, bro? What you enjoying? Let the people know what you're sipping on.
Eno coffee. We just came from there, actually. Drinking Eno coffee, and I think this is a honey that they have. Jeez. I've been drinking all week, and that they got to try on.
Nah, the Eno coffee was going crazy. Definitely, like, up there. It's like two spots we've been hitting. We've been at Kivu Noir, we've been at Eno, and I just feel like I can't stop hitting them spots. So, mm-hmm. Pause. You know what I mean? it's been amazing. It's been super dope. I have loved being out here, bro.
Yeah. Like,
in fact, my wife, she's calling right now, and she wants to move here. So,
You're welcome. Karibu, as we say around here.
Okay.
Karibu.
Okay.
Love it.
Dang, bro, I love it too. My wife loves it. She might love it a little bit too much. She sent me houses. She sent me addresses, like full price houses, but it is beautiful out here.
You better get your money, right?
I know, bro. We got to move some more coffee. So speaking of coffee,
that's
what you do, right?
That's what I do.
You move coffee. You are literally the plug.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so interesting, bro. Shout out to the homies at Mir that linked us. But my guy was telling me about what you do when we were in Seattle. And he was like, you got to meet my guy, Kenny. And shout out to Nick for that. So I was like, yo, we as a company are building on this proposition that it is possible to buy black, not just locally, but globally.
Yeah.
And to help the black dollar circulate, not just locally, but globally. You know, black Americans have a $30 billion spending power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you were to integrate, like, it's not just in America as well, but like, around the globe, we're seeing the rise of African entrepreneurs, artists, creatives. And as a company, we're sitting at this unique proposition of saying, what if some of that money was reinvested back into black coffee communities? And what would the world look like if we did that? So we started this idea of a black coffee supply chain inspired by my Latino mentor, Martin Mayorga from Mayorga Coffee, who has a Latino supply chain.
Yeah.
Like, yo, what would it look like for black folks to do that too? And people who do what you do are very essential. And it's honestly the hardest part in doing what we do, because black importers are so rare and hard to find. You know, we work with Equatorial, we work with Phyllis Johnson, so shout out to my peoples. But it's very difficult to find it. And a lot of times it can force you into a position of having to be creative as a company, especially with the sourcing, because our industry is built, specialty coffee specifically, is built so much on trends. And oftentimes those trends are from very affluent farms, and those farms partner with very affluent importers and exporters, which means a lot of times that you're not working with black people, which is, I mean, it's cool if you're doing that, but for us, we are trying to be intentional about making this black dollar circulate globally. So tell me, like, what is it like in the process you're in of, like, being in the position of being a black importer, and while you're doing it, just tell your story, how you got into it, what are some of the challenges you faced in doing it?
Absolutely. First off, great connecting, finally.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, I'm a believer in, like, being frank. I should say, like, frankly, like, when I first saw your work and, like, looked into it, I was like, yo, I wish I had the courage this man has to, like, be out there, like, talking about, you know, like, spreading his message, you know, because first 2 years of this business, I didn't put myself anywhere.
Can you elaborate on why that is?
Obviously, there's not a lot of us doing there's not a lot of us in specialty coffee. Like, it's just like, it's a predominantly white world, you know? You were a few things that I want to touch on. Like, you were talking about, for example, that it's about trends, and these trends are set by affluent farms, and then they work with affluent importers to do all that.
Yeah.
So for me, my whole thing is, I keep saying, like, Higa exists to celebrate African ingenuity. Mm-hmm. We're just talking about that, and that starts with us spreading our message about the things that we're working on, you know, mm-hmm. like the the honey that you should have, you know?
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Even the fully washed, it's snapping, bro. Like, it's...
Fully washed, the anaerobic.
So, Lynn Butler, you tried this, and you tried the anaerobic 2016, I believe, U.S. Barista Champ, top four in the world.
Yeah.
At the World Barista Championship. He tasted these coffees.
Yeah.
And the anaerobic as well. And he was like, you could compete with these. Like, these are competition-level coffees. And we're just at a small cafe that's innovative and willing to be creative in Rwanda, bro. So, like, to me, that says imagine what is happening here in the motherland that's just not getting the shine or the spotlight that some of these other, you know, cafes or farms or roasteries are getting.
Yeah.
You
know? So to kind of close the loop, like the vision is to just do something that celebrates here, you know?
Yeah.
I live at origin. Like, I don't think
we're... And not just any origin.
Yeah.
This is Africa is the origin.
The origin,
of all coffee on Earth's planet.
Where it's from.
Yeah.
No, the source.
Yeah. It's the roots. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So like, like it's important to me that we also highlight a lot of the good work that's going on out here. I don't think, I mean, not that I'm like dreaming small, but I don't think we'll ever be the biggest importer. And that's not really the goal. The goal is to just highlight the good work that's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
A bit, change the narrative a bit from the, you know, we're helping all these people. To you know, these people are producing a product.
These people are helping themselves.
You know, these people are So that's what it's about. That's what it's about for me. Yeah,
for sure, bro. So tell me about what that process is like. You know, obviously, most of these supply chains have been set up by these globally dominant neo-colonial superpowers.
Yeah.
So you're coming in as this kid from origin. I think you said you got to the U.S. through a student exchange program.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because we're here right now for phase one of the barista exchange program.
Yeah.
The Black Barista Exchange Program, which has been amazing. And yeah, you're at a point where you're saying like, yo, you know, you're there, you're looking at what resources you have, and you're like, yo, I want to take my opportunity, my privilege, if you will, to have made it here to the US and use that to help my people.
Yeah.
Like, to put my people on. You're not a farmer.
Yeah, no.
Which is an important thing to say. Like, everybody who's Black and they coffee and from Africa is not a farmer. And I think that after some tribes, people just see African person coffee and they're like, oh, so you're a farmer. It's like, nah, I'm actually not. You know what I mean?
I'm not even an exporter.
Yeah, I'm not even an exporter. I'm an importer. So explain to us what that means and explain maybe some of the challenges that you've experienced in doing that.
Yeah, I think the best way to go about that is just to, you know, bring it back to me, why this whole thing started and how it started and all that. So yeah, bring it back to graduate college. As soon as I graduate, I'm like, I find a job in the US, marketing, advertising. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this. You know, they're like, yeah, we're going to sponsor your visa. That doesn't work out. So I moved back to Rwanda. I'm like, the goal has always been to move back to Rwanda. Like, I was staying in the U.S. to hopefully get some, like, knowledge that I couldn't get here or, you know, bring something different that I couldn't bring here that's in the U.S. So that dream got cut short. So I was like, okay, let me just move back now and start now. First place I landed was in the bank.
Okay.
Processing loans.
Yeah.
Let's put it, like, I was not, it was then... Pretty quickly, within a month or two, I knew, like, this is not what I want to do. I was something that's a bit more creative.
Yeah.
And something that, like uses my unique experience.
You know,
like, I lived in Minnesota for, 8 years? So it's
Minnesota.
Like Minnesota. Or Minnesota, like I like to call it. Because of all the snow. But so, yeah, like, I started looking around and, you know, did some grant writing for a little bit. You know, went to some farms. Like, we started, like, looking at, like, what does Rwanda offer to the world?
Yeah.
You know, the number one thing was coffee and tea. But, so, yeah, I started, like, looking there. And then in coffee, I figured, okay, there's a lot of people. There's more than 200 producers in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of coffee that gets exported still gets exported through the major exporting companies.
Mm. Which are not Rwandan.
Which are usually not Rwandan.
Yeah.
I was like, what if I could... and then I learned about this new thing because I took a little internship where I was just like... I went in a cupping lab of one of these large importers. Those that shall be named. And we're there. I was just like, realized, okay, what if I could connect? So some of their classes were coming, like, where these people, they kept saying, like, specialty coffee. I was like, Mm-hmm. If I could connect some of the smaller producers to these buyers in the West, somewhere where I have lived, you know, people there can hear my accent.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I felt like this could be a good way to bring value to the people back home.
For sure.
So yeah, started that. Literally went to Minnesota with some samples. I had a gig where I was supposed to bring American high schoolers here.
Okay.
And they paid a ticket flight to the US.
Yeah.
And so yeah, took some samples with me. Just literally went to 16 coffee shops. Like, hey, like, I would just love your feedback on this coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And good folks at now Bootstrap. At the time, it was called Bootstrap. Now it's called Backstory. Mm-hmm. And then Dogwood. Those two were like, honestly, we really love the coffee. If you can get it here.
Yeah.
Well, so I was like, all right. See, that.
So essentially,
he got a bit
of plug. Like, he was the legal plug.
Yeah.
Moving work. So shout out to your first customers, you know?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
You guys are the real ones. So
yeah.
So that's kind of how it started. Mm. And some challenges, obviously, you know, like, this business is about relationship building, you know? It's not exactly easy to build a relationship if you're not in America,
mm-hmm.
which, trust me, I think about it a lot. I'm like, why are you doing this? You're not in America. But so that can be a challenge. The other challenge is financing, like getting good financing for where I'm able to pay the producers I work with a good price.
Mm.
Yeah, so those are the two major ones. But I also think we're also presented with a unique opportunity to be at Origin, highlighting the work that's happening at Origin.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to focus my energies. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought about, there was something you said when you were like, you know, you were at this bank, you're realizing this is not really what you want to do. And then you transition into working in these labs. You're like, okay, cool. There's a unique part of my story that I have. And I think that there's a moment for a lot of us, just as human beings, bro, but especially as people in the African diaspora as well, where you're faced with the choice to be curious about yourself,
mm-hmm.
and your roots,
mm-hmm.
and the unique notes that we all bring as the fruit of those roots,
yeah.
or to chase the money, or to chase kind of the straightforward path, the established market that's already been kind of built out there.
Yeah.
And individually, you can get paid individually by participating in the systems of this world that exist currently.
Yeah.
But what we see, unfortunately, is that they very often, my individual benefit does not lead to the collective benefit of where I come from and the people that we come from.
Yeah.
And that's a hard decision to make, because I know my own experience, like, you know, I graduated from this undergraduate school, a liberal arts school, Wheaton College. I graduate, everybody's expecting, like, I was valedictorian of my high school, people are expecting me to go make a lot of money. And my choice was, I'm going to go be an elementary school teacher, right? And because I wanted to give back, and I thought about these black men in my life, outside of my father, shout out to my mom and my pops, they've done an amazing job in my life. There were black men who contributed significantly to these turning points in my life. And I was like, somebody has to choose to keep being those people. And that led me to Coffee Do, a long story that you can hear at some other point in different podcasts. Yeah. But like, those moments to me, when it came to coffee, I was like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to keep doing what I was doing, but to also control the fund, because I was in the nonprofit world for a long time.
Yeah.
And it just got to a point where it's like, to be frank, like, old white dudes were controlling the destinies of my communities.
Yeah.
And I was tired of having to break promises I made to my community because somebody else who wasn't in my community decided it wasn't worth investing in.
Yeah.
That happened right before the pandemic. And I was like, I had to look kids in the face and say, we got to close down this thing we're doing, this project we're doing in the community. And they asked me, what did we do wrong? They're like, I'm like, that broke my heart, bro. Because I was like, you didn't do anything wrong. The individuals who said they would fund this project and then just decided they wouldn't,
mm-hmm.
right? Those are the people who forced me to have to break my word to you. And it's not your fault. And so I was like, I, as a man, can't stomach my ability to help my people being on somebody else's back. If I fail,
yeah.
and I fail because I just didn't do a good job, I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
because I can learn from that. But if I fail because someone else on a whim decided not to care anymore,
yeah.
I can't stomach it, bro. So that's what led me into the for-profit world, was wanting to be able to be able to have self-determination in who I help and how I help.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, at least with a business, bro, I can always make a better business plan. I can always make a better marketing scheme. We can drop new merch. I can make a new song. We can put a new film out. We can drop a new coffee.
Yeah.
You know, but like, the nonprofit world is just so scary, bro, because you make the wrong person feel a type of way and all of a sudden you can't operate. And I couldn't stand it, bro. So I was like, okay, what does it look like for us to keep doing what we're doing, but do it in a way where if people who believe in us, they can continue to support us by buying our products, not by donating, but by actually investing in what we're doing in a sustainable way.
And that sustainability part is what's important to me, what I'm doing and where I think, well, we can bring value is, I keep going back to the thing that you're talking about, these trends. Like, a lot of the way the coffee sector is set up here is for volume. Unfortunately, so yeah, like, we're gonna, you know, do all this, like, we're gonna produce a lot of volume, and yep. It's a legacy.
They want to see low quality.
Yeah, it's a legacy. It's a legacy kind of thing.
It's a legacy of colonialism. Isn't it, Frank?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so, but there are these people here that are like, I'm gonna go a different route. I'm gonna start doing the specialty stuff, like the Kevin's that you're visiting with, the Samai visit that you're hanging out with. And
I think God agrees with us.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I want to work with those people. I want to highlight those voices. You know, and also, you gotta give me that some of that merch. And let this be on the record. I need you coming that merch.
Say less. We left so man, Kiva Noir. So you know what I'm saying. You can tap in,
yeah.
And we'll get you a pack out for sure. But I was like, man, like, that's different, putting a different image out. And a big part of the work we've done,
yeah,
you know, the conversation about people from Africa is, it kind of has a trend. And when we did the first documentary, people asked me, like, you went to Ethiopia, the poverty.
Yeah.
And I was like, I ain't seen no poor people. I just saw wealthy people who haven't been properly compensated yet. Like, that's what I saw. I saw people who have a wealth in the land, a wealth in the history, a wealth in their heritage, a wealth in their knowledge, but that wealth has not yet been acknowledged and compensated correctly.
Yeah.
And our work, I feel like, is to help be a part of righting that wrong. You brought up something really interesting. We're like, bro, you know, there's a conversation happening right now in the industry around supporting smallholder farmers, which I think is important. But you brought a different perspective, bro. I feel like that was something that people need to take away. Would you mind elaborating more on that?
Yeah, I'll try to say it in the best way I could think of it. First, like, I'm not sure a lot of people want to be smallholder farmers from around here, at least. Like,
your cousin you mentioned.
Yeah, like, I think that they had a little farm with like a couple hundred trees. I don't remember the number of trees, but like, I'm not sure it would have been an exciting sight for him and Andrew to like grow up and then expand from 200 trees to 600, like 200 to 600 trees. It wouldn't have been an exciting prospect, you know?
Yeah.
And that goes back into what you're saying, like highlighting the good work that's already happening here. There are people who should be doing this and should be doing like specialty coffees, should be doing like, are in a position to, you know, like you've tasted Will's coffee.
Yeah, shout out to Big Willie.
You know, like,
you know what I mean?
Will is doing his name of the thing.
That's one of those that Lim was like, this is competition grade coffee.
Exactly.
And it blew our mind. And shout out to the roasting of that coffee and the brewing of that coffee.
Shout out to Anj and Raisa. I mean, if anybody sees that or is coming to Rwanda, Anj and Raisa at Eno Coffee.
Yeah.
Get their coffee.
These are like, let me understand, these are competition level roasts, and not just competition level green and processing, but also roasting and also brewing at origin in Africa at the birthplace of coffee. And I think that to me is,
I would love to tell that story.
Yeah.
I think I can't compete with, there's enough white people out here with NGOs and nonprofits.
Yeah, for sure.
That we're going to help the small boulder farmer.
Yeah.
Which, the sustainability of it all, I don't understand. But then also, yeah, I would love to talk about the Enos. I would love to talk about the, you know, the work Smire's doing. That's where I see myself bringing about it.
Yeah, so really, I feel like what you're saying is you want to change the face of African coffee. Mm-hmm. And that, like, a lot of times when we think about natural resources, when we think about Africa, we think about suffering, which is important to acknowledge that there is real suffering happening.
Yeah.
And people need to acknowledge that that's not okay.
Yeah.
But you're saying that's not the only story. There's also flourishing that's happening here. There's generational wealth that's being built here. Mm-hmm. And you want to be a part specifically with what's happening at HEDA with promoting and helping that to continue to be sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's beautiful, bro.
Before I forget, I don't know how we're doing on time, but before I forget, I want to jump into some questions that I had for
you. Oh, for sure, bro.
I want to jump into some questions I have for you. So the first one is, and I saw this line literally on your GoFundMe for this event, and it was, the line was, collaboration with a streetwear vet.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, I dig that. I want to figure out how to, because there's a lot of overlap between what we're talking about and what we're trying to do, but like, expand on that. Like,
sure. So like, my background is, I'm an MC. I said that in the intro.
Yeah.
I'm a rapper. We just passed 1 million streams. So like, shout out to the music stream, Bartholomew Jones, yeah. Coffee Black Movement Worldwide. We bubbling, baby. But the thing for me is like, bro, when I think about collaboration, and hip hop is not about our streetwear, even like things that are derived from, I would say that streetwear is kind of like an evolution from hip-hop. Hip-hop culture, one of the five elements. Like, think about it almost as a blend of, like, being an MC, but also being a dancer, but also being, like, into tagging and, like, designing with graffiti.
Yeah.
And I, like, what you wore kind of was an element of what you express yourself. And so in hip-hop, when I do a collab, or the concept of a cipher is pedagogically deeply embedded in the work we do, based on Paulo Freire and what he did with co-generative dialogues. So it's kind of like Chris Emden is a person who's trying to taking that concept and applied it from just adult education with campesinos in Latin America to also what he calls the neo-indigenous, or black and brown people who are in spaces in America right now, or in the first world, if you say that, but still experiencing a degree of oppression through gentrification, through redlining, Jim Crow, these kind of practices, to me, which are an extension of what you see in colonialism. So like, people in those spaces have innovated these ways of thinking and being, which I think hold on to these natural Africanisms that we see expressed fully out here in the culture. When we tap into the motherland, it's like the stuff they couldn't beat out of us, we still held on to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's like those things, those values in collaboration is almost like this idea of Ubuntu, right? Or like this idea of like having a collected identity, a shared destiny. When you do a collab in hip hop, it's not about who owns the collab. It's about how you can push the conversation further together, right? And so when it comes to hip hop, like when I hop on a track with somebody, it's not necessarily at its realest point. It's not, and a cipher specifically, is not about who's better than who. It's about how we can, on this collective piece, move the whole culture forward.
Yeah.
It's about how what the two of us can create something brand new while still maintaining our own collective identities.
Yeah.
Right. It's not me giving up and saying we're making a group. Nah, it's I respect you, you respect me. Let's make something even more respectable together.
Yeah.
And then that's just going to exist
to
be a piece of like, man, this is another step forward in this culture we're creating, this conversation we're having.
Yeah.
So with streetwear culture, it's the same thing. You'll see brands collab together because they feel like uniquely we have dope spaces, but together there's a synergy we can achieve that can't be there. And so like, that's the mentality I think about, which is why on this trip on the Black Barista Exchange program, it's not just my employees, right? It's people who I respect in this industry as Black people that I think are dope to me. And if it was all rappers, I just want to hop on a track with you just for the culture. That's what Drake and J. Cole just did.
Yeah.
Like, they got their respective things popping, but they tapped in not only once, but twice on the Scary Hours drop.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really just saying, man, this is a beautiful moment for the culture.
Yeah.
And I think if we took that mentality in coffee and not just saw each other as competition, right? But as specifically as Black folks in coffee, like that quote that I put up on the back of the shirt, like, yo, we get less than 1% of this thing, and this thing came from us, bruh. It came from the soil that we come from.
Yeah.
So what would it look like for us just put on one side, just to put some dope together and show the world what's possible when we come together and not just attack each other? And I think that's one of the things that I've learned from people in Rwanda so well, is like the power of what it looks like when we come together, right? We see the harm that can happen when we hurt each other. And then we saw that at the genocide memorial.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, what's even doper and what had me in tears there was seeing the healing that can happen when we reconcile and when we see each other as brothers and sisters, right? Regardless of our ethnic identities, regardless of what specific line that was drawn in the sand by some colonial power, like that we all are indigenous to this space. And like, we have a power when we come together that can bless the world. literally coffee has blessed the whole world, and it came from this soil. And so like, imagine what is left to be discovered if we came together with that mindset. So I'm inspired from that, from hip hop. I'm inspired from that, from streetwear. And I want to take that same energy and bring it into the coffee space too. Would be like, what could happen? Like, we was just in Ethiopia a week ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why come here too? Right? Because I think there's something beautiful that God has given each one of us as seeds of this land. And there are notes that when handled correctly, we say, if you brew better, you do better. So if you, when you hold the things right, when you really dial into the specifications, there are unique notes we can bring to the world that's going to bless the world and make the world's palate richer because of it. Or we can just hate on each other and highlight all our differences and beef, you know, and like, you know, get a really, really poor blend. But I'm like, yo, let's highlight the single origins we all have and use those as a way to celebrate and be energized together. So that's kind of the vibe behind the streetwear piece.
Yeah, no, I love that. And then I mean, first off, you strike me as somebody that's super creative.
You for sure. Me. Shout out to Memphis though. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, Memphis. Shout out to my little daddy and them. My granny and them.
Yeah, no, like, so give me some ideas. Like, you're talking about how you infuse street, you've infused like the streetwear bent into coffee.
Yeah.
Give me some ideas over how I could do the same, you know, like.
Well, so the concept we call it is being culturally congruent,
right?
Which means everything we're doing, we're trying to connect three dots, right? We're trying to connect the history, the current reality, and the potential future. Mm. And so we want every piece we do, and when I say piece, I don't just mean clothing piece. I mean, like, I think about all our drops as art. Yeah. So if we drop a coffee, it's a piece of art. It needs to connect those three dots.
Yeah.
If we drop a piece of apparel, it's a piece of art. It needs to connect those three dots.
Yeah.
If we drop a podcast, I'm talking about history. I'm talking about current reality. And I'm talking about what I imagine the future can be. Anything we do, we're bringing that head to that space.
Yeah.
And so being culturally congruent to me is creating a pathway for people to fly into the future we want to happen. And you need to be really intentional, because if you're a couple degrees off, with a plane, when you launch, you could be thousands of miles off by the time you land.
Yeah.
And so I try to really line those pieces up, because once people leave the ground, you can't control where they go. And as a brand or a company, we're hoping to inspire people to create the future that we all want. And once people leave me, they leave my brand, they leave contact with the product we have, I don't have control over where they go with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
So even the people on this ship, like, I don't know what it's going to do in their life once they leave, but I at least do my best to lay the groundwork to where, like, I can at least point them in the direction where I feel like makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Based on my experience. So like, for instance, Make Coffee Black Again. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first designs we dropped. At the time, 45 was doing this thing, you know, being very gangster. What's up, bro? Shout out to the culture. We live right now in Kigali, you feel me? So yeah, it was one of them joints where it was like, he was big. It was creating a lot of division with his old campaign. We ain't even gonna mention it, you know what I mean? But I was like, yo, there's something there that's speaking to what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a way being culturally congruent, but I think in a way that was going to point us toward destruction.
Yeah.
So I was like, what can I do in the coffee space? Like, when we say make coffee black or drink your coffee black, which was kind of the first thing we said.
Yeah.
It was like, when we say make coffee black again, there's multiple ways you can take it. One, that's literally, I'm drinking black coffee right now. No sugar, no cream. You know how I bowl, bro. They'll cover my dreams. That's one. But two, literally, we're talking about making coffee black, going back to the roots. And for a while, before I knew the history, I was more so just talking about diversity, like representation. Like, yo, just add me in there too. Make it black too. Like, it's everything else, but like, can I have a spot? But when I learned the history, I was like, oh, we are the original spot. So it's not just, hey, can I have a spot? It's like, we want to have a table of our own.
Mm.
Not for the division of anyone else, but for us to be able to keep what we kill.
Yeah.
And to keep what we grow and to enjoy the fruit of our harvest, which is one of the drops we just did on the Coffee is the African Fruit piece. We deserve to enjoy the fruit of our labor.
Sweet.
And it's like, though, making coffee black again is like returning to it. But then there's also this element of what happens. What does that look like?
Mm.
But I want to find out.
Yeah.
Like, part of it looks like this conversation. Like, making coffee black again means like us being in the motherland and being in a space where young kids can walk by and see two brothers of African descent who both are coffee nerds in their own right. It's just one of the first reasons I always identify Bartholomew Jones, coffee nerd, educator, MC. Like, we about to drop some coffee nerd merch, actually. So shout out to coffee nerd merch. But like, he can see us and be like, yo, this is dope. These brothers obviously is from different origins on the continent, but they're connecting over something that is indigenous to this continent, just like we are, into all different parts, all 130 species plus of it.
Yeah.
So like,
it's something that not a lot of people typically associate with Black people, you know?
Yeah, bro, and we're changing, and not only are we changing people's perception, but we're returning people's perception to a correct perception.
Yeah.
Perception.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that in all those things happening at once with one statement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind of our goal anytime we drop something. And sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't, but it's about the process. It's about dialing in.
Yes.
It's about, you know, you may not get the first brew right. You know what I'm saying? But you're going to keep brewing, you're going to keep doing, you brew better, you do better. So.
Yeah. So second thought that I kept, you know, we've hung out all like weekend.
Yeah, he took me to some spots, bro. You know, this man the plug, bro. When you get out here, tap in, you feel me?
Hit him up. you said, first off, I know you got a family. You have a family, by the way. I met your wife.
What up, cousin?
What up, cousin Abney? Yeah, so, but there's also another thing that you kept saying that it was like, you're a creative first and an entrepreneur second.
For sure.
Yeah. I remember being like, bro, you got kids to feed too.
Yeah.
How do you like make sure those two like, because you were talking about earlier too, like when you were working for the nonprofit world, but you're like realizing this is not really sustainable.
Yes.
But like now you got a business.
Yeah. And I think there are phases.
Yeah.
We have been in a phase when we started at the end of 2019 pandemic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The company blew up during the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's why we say the pandemic, you know what I mean? Like we went crazy, six figures in 9 months. It's crazy.
Jesus.
So it's like, boom, this is my first year. Like, cool, we have a demand. Always am about innovation, and that's just how God made me. I think my wife balances me out because she'd be like, okay, but is this stable?
Yeah.
But I'm always about, like, what's the next thing?
Mm.
And I want to be able to get to the next thing before someone gets their disingenuous. I want to genuinely arrive at the next thing before someone disingenuously arrives there.
Yeah.
Because I feel I'm very protective over a vision. I'm a person of faith. I say this all the time. You know, so shout out to Yeshua. And, like, I feel like when God gives me a vision for something, I feel a certain responsibility to communicate that. I guess the word would be correctly or genuinely, authentically. Even I have a fear about people knowing the right thing for the wrong reason. And people, you know, I say this all the time. Like I actually won't say this on the podcast with me, so you don't get ready like this. But I am definitely not a proponent of like unchecked capitalism.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, and that's been a journey, but I think for me, I'm like, bro, you know, I just care about how these things are presented. And so we've sacrificed a lot to be able to communicate something in a way that we feel is genuine and authentic to the vision God's given us, even when that means we don't necessarily profit from it.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah.
We feel like it's at least we're doing it in a way that is authentic to respecting the people in the way that we feel people should be respected.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that is unique to us, but I also feel like, I mean, it's not unique to us in the whole of the world, but I think it's a unique thing we hold to, where even if we can make more money not innovating, we still would rather innovate and then make money afterwards. And that's been a process for the last 4 years of building a foundation. I think at this point in history, I'm actually having conversations about like, you know, I was just telling you, even with the merch, like a lot of the ideas I'm holding off, right? I have like maybe 10 or 12 different merch concepts that I've just put in the vault at this point because I'm like, I gotta set it up. Yeah, we're launching a really crucial part of our company and we're launching a really crucial part of what I think the future of our company is gonna be about building. And like, I kind of gotta hold off on some other things so that we could do some scaling. Now and allow people to have the opportunity to build partnerships. So there is definitely phases, but I approach it the same way I approach my music, bro. Like the first thing I do when I have an idea for a beat is I just open it up and I go.
Yeah.
And even if it's good, I don't care. I'm not editing first.
Yeah.
I'm creating first and then I edit and curate second. Yeah. Because if I start off trying to curate too much, I'm killing my possibilities.
Yeah.
And I'd rather explore every possibility and then come back at a later point and explore what needs to be trimmed. But it's kind of like growing a fro out.
Yeah.
You can't grow a fro out if you get an edge up every week and you're getting taper every, or your dreads taper every week, there's going to be a phase where it's going to look a little messy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But that's necessary for growth.
Yeah.
If you really want to get the maximum growth, you got to give yourself time and permission to grow and not worry about how that appears to other people, because growth gives you the opportunity to explore, and exploration leads you to be able to really tap into the resources that are meant for you.
One of the things I really love that I hear, I don't really know where I got it from, but it's like most people, it says most people aim first, then shoot.
Let us
really shoot, then aim.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying,
because you're
basically what you're saying, but
yeah.
So it's
you'll reach analysis paralysis, bro. Some people are afraid of failure, and I'm not anymore. You know, I've experienced failure, and failure not from my own head.
Mm.
And that's what scares me the most, bro.
Yeah.
It's failing because I didn't try it.
Yeah.
Instead of failing because I did. Because the scripture say a wise man falls down seven, but he gets up eight. Or maybe he falls down six, but he gets up seven. But you get the vibe.
Yeah.
Right? To me, it's like you always have the ability to return and to try. And I think you build, failing publicly also gives you the opportunity to build that relationship.
Like, well, no, that muscle of like, yo, like it's okay. Like,
yeah, but also,
yeah.
I would say this, I agree with that. But I also say customers value seeing you fail publicly because it builds authenticity. Mm-hmm. People know you're a real person. And they get to see your growth. And when people see your growth, it makes them relate to their own growth.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then there becomes a connection that you're sharing real experiences in real time.
Mm-hmm.
People see me fail. We tried to launch a sneaker collab. The collab didn't work. Like, you know what I mean? We sent you an email, offered you a refund. We got the prototypes. The prototypes are dope. But to me, that's a lesson learned for the next collab. It's a lesson learned for the next thing we do. And I'm never afraid of failing publicly. At the end of the day, you always offer people a refund. But I think the journey and the storytelling that you go through on it is more important. And people being a part of that, I think people appreciate authenticity, especially in the age with the internet where everybody sees this fake, pristine, filtered version of everyone.
Yeah.
Just being a like, hello,
yeah.
I'm a real person.
Yeah.
Like, I just went to the restroom an hour ago and you did too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's like a trust
yeah.
that comes from you showing people
the
really like,
The showing the real journey, not
yes,
the manicure journey. Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And to go back to coffee, I think that's what people are selling. People are selling authenticity, but really they're just selling a Dropbox folder full of pictures of a person they never met. And oftentimes, unfortunately, from what I'm hearing from farmers, even if you did meet them, the meeting is not that great. You know what I mean? The type of interactions that people are having
is exactly into what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, the whole small folder thing that's value to what career that's put in front of everybody.
It's kind of like poverty porn in some ways, you know what I mean?
On one side, it could be poverty porn, but it's also like some of the people who try to rebrand it as a, oh yeah, look at how happy this farmer is. Oh no, bro, they're just my, because you have a camera in their face. It's like a normal thing. You when I put a camera in front of you, the normal reaction is to like,
yeah, no.
And I guess,
yeah.
But there's no deeper connection there. Yeah.
That's
why
I'm there, bro.
I think we're almost done with our time, but
the show.
This has been amazing. Like,
come on, bro.
I'm so glad we got to connect.
Yes, sir.
I'm so glad I learned how to put myself out there. Be like, you know, like learn from you. Really, honestly,
that is
just great. Like, it's your journey's been inspiring. I think I saw earlier that I texted you back in 2020.
I saw me at a DF in 2020. But I was like, dang, he was like,
I'm sure what was going on was probably like, yeah, I don't know, like, this dude is just, like, really cool and, like, doing really amazing things. Like, let me, like, chill and, like, get to a point where I could, like, even know what I'm talking about. But now I'm realizing, like, you're just saying, like, with you know, putting your stuff out there and editing later.
Yeah.
I should have just kept with it. Like, I should have just been like, yeah, let's talk. Like, I don't really know what I'm doing yet, but.
Yeah. And I say it's all cyclical, bro. Like, maybe that was what you needed at that time. And now you're in a position to enter a phase of just, like, you know, being unedited, unfiltered, no sugar, no cream. You know what I'm saying?
No cream, yeah.
And you know, I think there's a place for all things,
yeah,
all things at all in good time. So we're in that phase where it's like, bro, you know, we're connecting, and everything's not gonna be perfect, but I think it's gonna be beautiful, and I think there's something that's worthwhile in that.
Say less.
My child, you,
yeah.
All right, man. Y'all keep the coffee black. Stay tuned. Cool. Let the people know where they can tap in and buy it.
Higa Coffee on Instagram.
Legend, real quick.
Higa Coffee, Higa Coffee.
Yeah,
on Instagram. And me, Kenny at KNTWALI. Also on Instagram. You could also go on our website if you're a roaster and you want to, you know, get some coffees.
For sure.
HigaCoffee.com, HigaCoffee.com. some bags.
Come on, yo.
Thank you.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Appreciate it.
We link, bro. Memphis to Kigali. You see what it is. Keep that coffee black. We'll catch y'all next time. We out.
Coffee stay black, just like me. Don't need no sugar, don't need no cream. Coffee stay black, just like me. Black like me, 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 black like me.